Hello, and welcome to the Tipsy Archives. My name is Rachel Leagy, and I'm joined by my friend Christine Logan. And today we talked about some of our favorite creepy fairy tales, some of the more darker and gory stories that we could find from European folktales. Some of these you guys will have heard of, and a couple might be new to you. So pour yourself a glass of wine, and I hope you enjoy.
I want to start by saying that, as we found in our research, there's about a million different versions of every fairy tale. So if you hear one and you think that's not the way I remember it, just be aware that there are just so many variations.
Yeah.
So naturally, we looked for the goriest and weirdest versions of the ones that we could find. One more disclaimer about today's episode. I am recording in my house today, so you very may well hear the heating kick on, the fridge buzzing, or potentially a baby crying upstairs. Because there is a 2-year-old that lives up there, and he's going through a lot of stuff right now.
He's gone mad.
Yeah.
Got a hard life.
But, you know, crying baby sounds probably won't be too bad for to add to the atmosphere of the fairy tales we're going to talk about.
The gore. Yeah.
Yeah. So why don't we get started with you, Christine?
Okay. So I'm going to start off with Rumpelstiltskin, which I think is a story that a lot of people know in some way, anyway. Mm-hmm. So, the Grimm's version of this story starts out with a miller who is trying to impress the king, and he tells the king that his daughter can spin straw into gold. So, the king tells him that that's great, but I need proof. So, he says that he is going to take his daughter, and he'll basically hold her hostage for 24 hours, and in that time, he's going to give her a bunch of hay, and if she can spin all of that straw into gold, then he won't kill this miller.
So, and in that time, the daughter is thinking, thanks, Dad.
Yeah, pretty much.
What the hell?
Yeah, exactly. So, the daughter gets locked in this tower and is just distraught because she obviously can't spin straw into gold, and it's all her dad's fault that he's gonna die, and she'll probably die as well. But suddenly, a little man, who we eventually find out is Rumpelstiltskin, enters onto the scene and says that he can spin the straw into gold for her in exchange for her necklace that she has. So she agrees to it, and...
Is there any background on, like, is the necklace important?
Not really. He just needs something in exchange, and she's like, well, I have this necklace that's here. So that's what they
exchange. That's just the
first
of the bargaining chips.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So again, like a lot of the other stories, this kind of happens in a set of three. And so after this first night, the king sees that she's talented, and he's like, okay, well, I'm gonna try this again to make sure that she's not deceiving me in any way. So he puts her in a room twice as big, so gives her twice the amount of hay, and again, she's distraught, so Rumpelstiltskin comes to her and says, okay, well, I'll spin all of this into gold for you. What do you have to offer me now? So she gives him a gold ring, and he agrees to spin all of this into gold. And the king comes and says, okay, if you do this for one more night with, again, double the amount of straw, I will marry you. So on the third night, she has nothing left to exchange for Rumpelstiltskin. So instead, he says, okay, well, I will do this for you if you give me your firstborn child. So she agrees, not really thinking too much of it, and the king marries the miller's daughter, and they eventually have a child.
So she makes all this gold for him,
yeah.
And he's like, you're pretty hot,
yeah,
and you just gave me a bunch of gold,
mm-hmm.
Let's get married.
Yeah.
So never again he says,
no.
I want some more gold.
No.
He's just like, that's enough.
That's it, we're good now.
Yeah.
We have a lot of gold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Out of all the women in the kingdom, you're the one.
Yeah, the miller's daughter.
Yeah.
And he even says in it, he's like, I know she's a miller's daughter, and, you know, like, she's obviously low class, but, I mean, look at what she can do. She's got
even
some skills
though
here.
She can never do it again.
Apparently not, no. And he doesn't seem to care.
Hmm.
So she
if
has...
He's just dazzled by the gold.
Well, and there's a lot of it now. I mean, how much...
He doesn't need more.
No.
You always need more.
I guess.
You're a king,
yeah, you're a king. But, like, just so much. Where are you going to put it all?
Mm-hmm.
The logistics of it are just too much for him, I guess. So, she has this child, and Rumpelstiltskin appears, and says that he's going to take the child away, and she gets really distraught, and she refuses to give him her child, so he says, fine, I will give you 3 days to guess my name, and if you can't do it within that time, then I will take the child.
Because she, unlike us, has never heard of him.
Yeah, exactly. And so I thought that in the version that I remember as a kid, he only gave her 3 chances to guess the name. So, like, she had 3 guesses.
Hmm.
But in the version that I read of, like, the earlier, like, whatever it was, 1819 version of the Grimms, it was that she had, like, she could guess as many times as she wanted just within the 3-day period. So she sends out a bunch of people because after the first 2 days, she feels like she's just run out of new names. She can't think of anything else.
So she's guessing things like Frank.
Yeah.
Or
yeah. Howard. I mean, there are a couple weird names that she picks, but, like, for the most part, yeah, it's, like,
Houston.
John and stuff. Yeah. So she sends out a bunch of her people to collect new names for her. So these new names are collected, and luckily, on the last night, a messenger sees Rumpelstiltskin dancing around a fire, talking about how excited he is that she's never going to guess that his name is Rumpelstiltskin. And so he says, why don't you try Rumpelstiltskin? So when this little man comes back, she says, is your name Rumpelstiltskin? And he gets so angry that she's guessed correctly. He grabs both of his legs and rips himself in half. Which is just ridiculous. And, like,
if I can't have that baby,
it's like, oh, I'm just gonna kill myself. But so it, like, this one seems fairly harmless in my mind for, like, Disney not to have picked, you know, to
I mean, what are you gonna also it's not that interesting of a story. It's kind of weird. I mean, it would be more interesting, which of course Disney or anyone else could do, if you like, well, who is this guy? Is he human? Why
What's his background?
Why is he magical? Yeah. Is he really dead when he rips himself in half, I guess?
What's happening there?
Who can do that?
Yeah, grab onto both their feet and rip themselves in half? I don't know.
I mean, he clearly has a lot of power.
If he can manage that.
And what are you going to do with a baby?
Yeah, that's the more important question. What is he doing with the newborn child?
People recently have been talking about Labyrinth, of course, because David Bowie just passed away.
Right.
And I had somebody that I was either talking to or I read something said they made a Rumpelstiltskin connection because he takes the baby.
Mm.
And he's the Goblin King. I don't know if there's much to that at all, but I just thought it was kind of a funny.
So maybe Rumpelstiltskin is the Goblin King?
Maybe.
Which wouldn't be totally unbelievable.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I think Disney could do a lot more if, like, the princess was the one that was, or not the princess, the Miller's daughter, I guess, was super selfish and boastful and says that she has these amazing abilities, but it turns out she doesn't. And that's how this whole thing comes about.
She's really a victim.
Yeah, because it's a weird story that, like, she is continually being shit on because men are making weird decisions in her life. Like, she has no control over anything that's happening to her.
Yeah, it's definitely a bizarre little tale. Well, I'm going to start with a fairy tale that I had never heard of until I started doing some research. So it'll probably be a new one for you and
that's exciting.
Lots of other people. It is a Grimm fairy tale, and it's called The Goose Girl. So this is a story about a young princess named Annie Dory Calandra Taliana Isalie.
Good lord.
We'll call her Annie.
Sounds good.
When she was a little girl, she discovered that she could talk to animals. So instead of wanting to do princessy things, she always wanted to be outside playing with animals. And, you know, who can blame her? This is a weird kingdom where, like, there's about a third of people who can talk to animals, and then a third of people who can talk to humans, which I don't really understand if, like, only those people can talk to humans. I didn't really understand that part of it, but there's animal-speaking people, human-speaking people, and then, like,
others,
ghost-speaking people, or there's a third one that they barely talk about.
Okay.
But it's a different...
They can speak to others.
Not animals or humans.
All right.
Something else. But Annie is an animal-speaking person.
Mm-hmm.
I assume she can also speak to people, but... So she loves animals, and she also has this maid who she considers to be a good friend named Celia. And, but Celia, unlike Annie, always dreams of being a princess, so she's kind of jealous of her. When Annie's father dies, her mother decides it's time to send her off to marry a prince in a neighboring kingdom. And her mother tells her the journey will probably be dangerous, so she gives her this special charm that she makes out of her own blood. You know, like you do.
Lovely, yeah.
So the queen sends her off with her maid, a talking horse, or I guess a horse that she can talk to.
Right.
And some guards. And along the way, you know, it's a many days journey. At some point, the princess becomes thirsty and says to her maid, Celia, can you please fetch me some water from that stream? And the maid says, no, do it yourself. She's basically just sick of being a maid. And Annie's hurt because she thought they were friends, and she goes to the stream and she bends over to get a drink. And her mother's charm falls off into the water.
Oh,
and
no.
Celia sees that she is unprotected and says, like, this is her chance. And by this point, she has gotten the guards on her side. You know, I don't know how she's done that. I'm going to say sexual favors. I'm not really sure.
Just reading into it.
I don't know. But, so basically they gang up on her and, you know, they force the princess to take off her nice clothes.
Oh.
And so Leah forces her to switch places with her.
Interesting.
So they switch her clothes, they switch horses, the guards back her up and are pretending that the maid is now the princess. And they tell the real princess, who is now the maid, like, you swear an oath, you must never tell anybody this has happened, you know, or we'll murder you. So they ride off to the new kingdom, the new town. And, of course, the prince right away thinks that Celia is the real princess, and he sweeps her up, and he takes her into the castle, and they get married, and, you know, that happens.
Yep.
And Annie gets a job taking care of geese. So she's the goose girl. So and as much as she misses, you know, the life of being a princess, she's doing okay. She likes animals. Mm-hmm. She makes the most of it. You know, she's tending to these geese with this other little boy whose name I believe is Conrad. And so Celia, the fake princess, doesn't, you know, they're living in a time or a kingdom where people talk to animals. So she knows that she has to get rid of the horse. She tells the butcher, cut the horse's head off, which he does because she can't have the horse telling people.
Okay.
Annie finds out and she's distraught. She goes to the butcher and she says, please give me the horse's head. So she takes the horse's head and she nails it up on the gate by her house so she can walk by it every day and talk to it, which she does.
Of course, yeah.
And she goes by all the time and she's always like, oh, my dear horse, I miss you so much. And the horse goes, and the horse talks back to her, which at first I thought maybe she's kind of nuts.
Right, yeah.
But then in at least one version, the goose boy, he could hear the horse talking. Or the king could also hear the horse talking.
Okay.
So the horse head is still talking.
It's sort of alive.
It's something.
Somehow.
I don't really know what's happening. So, you know, each day she takes care of these geese. She talks to the horse head. The horse head is always, like, being, I think, like, kind of a dick. Because he's like, oh, if your mother could see you, she'd be so sad. So eventually, the boy who's helping her tend the geese, Conrad, he goes to the king and he's like, I can't work with this girl anymore. She's fucking crazy. And
fair enough.
The king is intrigued. He's like, who is this girl?
Yeah.
And he goes to talk to the girl and he says, tell me your story. And she says, I can't tell you my story. So the king says, maybe you'll feel better if you just tell your story to the stove and I'll leave you alone. So she does. She goes to the kitchen. She tells her story to the stove, but of course the king is outside the door listening. And, you know, he hears her. He believes her. He cleans her up and puts her in princess clothes, and he's like, oh, you must be the princess. I totally believe you.
Okay.
And then he goes to the fake princess, and he says, he kind of explains the story to her like it's a fable.
Okay.
And he says, what would you do in this position? Mm-hmm. And she says, you know, if somebody ever did that, I would throw them in a barrel full of nails, and I would drag them through town until they died. And he goes, okay.
So that's what he does.
Yeah, that's what he does.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. He's like, you're an imposter, and he throws her in a barrel full of nails and drags her through town with a couple of horses until she's dead. And then Annie, the real princess, marries the prince and lives happily ever after.
What's really sad about that, though, is like, the other girl was just sick of being a servant.
Really? You feel bad for her?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, like, you feel bad for Annie as well, but also, like, she was just trying to get out of a bad situation.
But, like, if she had stuck with Annie and been, like, still been her servant to the princess, she still would have lived
true.
In the castle
yeah,
and
had
a perfectly
good situation.
Yeah, and, like...
I mean, that's obviously what the story is about, is, like, there, you should not overreach your bounds there.
Mm-hmm.
You have a place in society.
But, yeah, the whole, the dead horse head...
Yeah, and, speaking to a young girl.
So, yeah, there was a version where I think the king or the prince or somebody does go and see and overhears her talking to the horse head, and hears the horse head talk back. So that's the point where I thought,
they know.
Oh, okay, so this isn't just in her head.
Yeah, she's not totally crazy.
I don't know what that's about, but
just a little crazy.
That's the goose girl.
That was fun.
Yeah.
That was a good one.
Yeah, new stories.
Also very weird.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm doing Little Red Riding Hood now.
Yeah.
Which is kind of one of my favorite fairy tales, but mostly because as a child, this one gave me so many nightmares. Like, this is the one that stands out to me the most. As a kid, I had, like, the weirdest, most irrational fear of wolves and werewolves, and it was because of this story.
You know what movie gave me nightmares as a kid?
What?
Ernest Scared Stupid.
Oh my god.
Like, more than any other movie.
That's hilarious.
Because the troll just really freaked me out. It was just the troll. Fair.
There's always weird stuff like that as
a kid. I haven't seen it since then. Like,
I bet you'd be like, fine.
Oh, man, I'm sure if I watched it now, it would just be the worst thing I've ever seen. But, yeah. Anyway, continue.
Yeah, so Little Red Riding Hood is an interesting one. Also because there's a lot of elements to this story that I don't always remember from it. So, obviously, there's kind of, like, the general storyline with most of the versions of Little Red Riding Hood that I came across, where it's a little girl who's been told to go to her grandmother's house with some type of treats for her because she's ill.
Mm-hmm.
So she ventures off into the forest, being told to stay on the path, and a wolf comes along and convinces her to leave the path. And she goes and picks flowers, and the wolf runs ahead and goes to Grandma's house and eats Grandma, and then lies in Grandma's clothes in her bed and waits for Little Red Riding Hood to come along. So eventually Little Red Riding Hood makes her way to this cottage. She goes in, and the wolf somehow tricks her with his whole, you know, how big teeth you have, all the better to eat you with, and eats her. And then in the grim version of the story, there's a huntsman who's walking through the forest and hears loud snoring coming from Grandma's house,
mm-hmm.
and is like, that doesn't sound like Grandma, that's too loud snoring.
Mm-hmm.
So he runs in, sees that it's the wolf, cuts the wolf open while the wolf is asleep, and pulls out Grandma and Little Red Riding Hood completely whole and fine. And Little Red Riding Hood then grabs some stones from the river and fills up the wolf's belly with stones, sews him back up, and so when the wolf...
Is the wolf asleep?
The wolf was asleep, still alive throughout this whole thing, for whatever reason.
Okay.
The wolf stands up when he wakes up and is like, whoa, there's stones in my belly, and dies. That's what kills him.
This is the grim version?
This is the grim version. Yeah. And then there's a second part to the Grimm's story, where, Little Red Riding Hood goes back home, whatever. She's going to visit Grandma at another point in time, and another wolf comes along, and she's like, I know what you guys are about now. I'm not going to fall for this. So she doesn't stray off the path, and she goes straight to Grandma's, but the wolf follows her. And when she she manages to get there, Grandma's like, okay, well, we need to figure out how to get rid of this wolf because he's just, like, stalking us outside.
Mm-hmm.
So they fill up a pan full of sausages, cook the sausages to, like, lure him through the chimney, and then they put a giant bucket of water and drown him in the bucket as he falls down the chimney.
Like, the fire's not going to do it, though?
Yeah.
You were going to say he fell into the fire.
There are a few different versions that, like, the version that I read as a kid, I think he burned in the fire. The version that I read looking up this story was that he drowned in a bucket because he, like, fell off the roof. So, I don't know. There's several different versions. But the Charles Perrault version is
sexier, isn't it?
Is the more interesting version because he tells Little Red Riding Hood to get into bed with him. And just as, like, you know, just a line that seems very innocent, she takes off all of her clothes and then gets into bed with the wolf. thinking that it's grandma, and it seems like it's a totally normal thing, but it's not. It's, like, weird. But
when do you ever do that with
your grandparents? Yeah, it's, like, a very strange thing. And then he eats her, and that's just the end of the story. And in the Charles...
And he eats her, quote-unquote.
Yeah.
But...
Eats her. But, and that's it. That's how it ends.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of all of, like, the Charles Perrault fairy tales, he gives a moral of the story. And his moral of the story for this one... I think I tagged it because it's super, super strange. Okay, so Charles Perrault's moral for this story is children, especially pretty, nice brought up young ladies, ought never to talk to strangers. If they are foolish enough to do so, they should not be surprised if some greedy wolf consumes them, elegant Red Riding Hoods and all. Now, there are real wolves with hairy pelts and enormous teeth, but there are also wolves who seem perfectly charming, sweet-natured, and obliging, who pursue young girls in the streets and pay them the most flattering attentions. Unfortunately, these smooth-tongued, smooth-pelted wolves are the most dangerous beasts of all.
Yeah, so it's rapey.
It's, yeah, basically, yeah. Like, little girls, it's your job to figure out if a creepy old man is trying to rape you.
Don't be too nice or too cute. Yeah, to people that also seem nice to you but
and
are too
like,
smooth.
Little Red Riding Hood is supposed to be super young in this. Like,
it's kind of victim blamey.
Yeah, it's very weird. It's like a super uncomfortable story when you read it in that way.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
Stranger danger.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, well, speaking of stranger danger, I'm going to talk about the Pied Piper.
Yeah.
Now, this is a story that, even before I knew any of the background to it, always creeped me out.
Yeah, it's a weird story.
It's a pretty weird story. So, in a small German town of Hamelin, in 1284, the people were facing some pretty big problems, mostly that they were just completely overrun by rats. And in any medieval situation, this is terrible, because they carry disease. This is about 100 to 50 years before any of the Black Plague stuff is, like, really ramped up.
Right.
But I'm sure it's still pretty bad disease-wise. Yeah, so there's just tons of rats around. Suddenly one day this weirdly dressed stranger shows up, in which I read today that pied means it's some kind of reference to colorful clothing.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah.
So he says he's a talented piper, like he talks to the mayor, and he says, I can get rid of all your rats for a price. And the price is quite high, so basically, to what us would be thousands of dollars.
Mm.
The townspeople and the mayor say, no problem, just get rid of them, this is terrible. So the Pied Piper goes through town playing a tune, and all the rats follow him, and he leads them out of town, all the way down to a river where he, you know, controls them into going into the river and drowning themselves. So he comes back into town and asks for his payment. But now the rats are all dead, and the townspeople and the mayor just say, no, we're not going to pay you. What are you going to do? Dick move.
Yeah.
So the Piper is understandably pretty pissed off, and he vows revenge. And exactly a year later, he shows up with his magical pipe, and he lures all the children of the town to follow him while all the adults are at church. Now, and I don't know why the children aren't in church, because when I was a kid, I had to go to church all the time.
Right.
But for whatever reason, they're not.
Yeah.
And so most of the children were never seen again. Only 3 children remained. One who was lame and couldn't keep up, one who was deaf and couldn't hear the music, and one who was blind and basically just kept running into walls.
Just like, that's just so heartbreaking.
Couldn't see where he was going. It's good for him, though.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they survived.
So these 3 disabled children stay behind and basically tell the adults what happened, and all the other children are gone. And that's, like, it's not a very long story, but the most interesting thing about this story is that it's actually based somehow on a true story, in that there really is a town of Hamelin, and they do have town records that talk about how a large chunk of the town's children, about 130 of them, disappeared, went missing, were suddenly gone. They don't specify that they died. There is just a town record from 1384 that says it has been 100 years since our children left. There is another record that says, in the year of 1284, on the day of St. John's and Paul, on June 26, by a piper, clothed in many kinds of colors, 130 children born in Hamelin were seduced and lost at the place of execution near the Copen, which I think is a river.
Okay.
So, yeah, like, they're, according to a couple of town records, a bunch of kids really did go missing or die.
Yeah.
And, like, they don't really know, nobody really knows what happened. There was a stained glass window in a church that had a depiction of the piper, like a man in a colorful, almost kind of like a jester type outfit with a pipe and some children. The window doesn't exist anymore, but there's drawings of it. So, and there was, I believe, also an inscription somewhere on the window about, you know, like our poor children or we love or miss our children or something.
Like, it's beyond creepy.
Yeah.
What, like, happened in this town?
Yeah, who knows? I mean, and this is the strangest thing about history is that we only get, you know, the snippets of what was written down or what was recorded, or so many things were not recorded. But even the stuff that is, you know, maybe we'll only get like a few pages.
Well, and it's so interesting that this was turned into a story that was obviously meaningful enough to whatever happened to the people who lived there.
But there's no evidence of the early stories having anything to do with rats. So the question is, if these kids really disappeared and if there was any kind of a piper and it wasn't rats, what was it?
Right.
So, you know, some historians think that it was a plague or a sickness that wiped everyone out, and maybe the piper is just like an allegory for the Grim Reaper. So, you know,
which makes sense.
Leading them onto a new plane or the afterlife. There are theories about there being some kind of Christian children's crusade to Romania. There had been a lot of, podcast people about my lack of notes, but it's either Mughals or Mongols.
Okay.
Both groups of people who swept through areas and terrorized them. So there was a lot of activity in Eastern Europe that was, you know, probably like Muslim or non-Christian. So there were people wanting to missionary into those areas to bring Christianity back. So that's not totally far-fetched that people were going to that area to try to, like, bring Christianity back to Transylvania, Romania, those areas. Why they would send that many kids?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there would have been at least a couple adults.
Yeah, they just sent the children.
I don't know. I mean, there's theories that they were just going to settle somewhere else, more east. I mean, there's all kinds of theories, but there's no real evidence as to what happened other than a bunch of kids were there and that were not there. And that's all we really know.
Somewhat horrifying.
And to this day, there is a street in Hamelin called Bungalowsenstrasse. And that's the street without drums, and you are not allowed to play music on that street.
Ooh,
and it's apparently the street where the children were last.
So creepy.
So creepy.
So creepy. I love it.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's, I mean, and I could dig deeper and find so much more on the Pied Piper, especially when you get into all the different theories. So.
Right. Yeah. I've like
about it. And I wouldn't think you could move on to a creepier story, but apparently you can.
But here we are.
But here you are. Because this story you're going to talk about, I didn't even really. It's Bluebeard.
Yeah.
I saw it come up on lists of fairy tales, and in my mind didn't even register it as a fairy tale, because I'm like, this isn't a fairy tale, this is a horror story.
Yeah, and it totally is.
Why did anybody consider this to be a fairy tale of any kind?
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, it's one of my favorites because it's the most kind of baffling as to how this was ever used to teach children,
entertain, or
it's just like, why was this ever made a thing that you would want to read to people? I don't know.
I don't even know if there's really a moral there, but let's get into it and find
out. And okay, so the version that I read was Charles Perrault, because I couldn't actually find like a Grimm version of it. It seems like this was the last.
That's the name I've definitely heard the most come up with, the Bluebeard thing.
Yeah, so I think I have a feeling that with the Grimm brothers, they just found it too much, which is not surprising, because what happens in this story, basically, it is about a wealthy businessman, which is also a strange thing to have in a fairy tale. It's very mundane. But he has a blue beard, and so a lot of people find him very ugly for this reason, and he decides that he wants to marry one of the two daughters who live next door to him, and they are uneasy about this. They can't decide which one of them wants to marry him because they know he's been married before. They think he's kind of ugly with this blue beard, so they just kind of are like, kind of pushing it off, you know? They want the other one to say yes, it's basically. Like
that kind of hair that's so black that it's almost blue.
I don't know where the blue comes in. Yeah. But so he has, like, this massive party that lasts for several days. And it's basically to try and woo one of the daughters to, like, pick him. And so because of his extravagant wealth and, you know, his hospitality that he shows, the daughters decide between them who is going to marry him. So they get married, they live for several months together and are happy, and suddenly Bluebeard has to go off on a business trip, so he leaves his wife alone in the house, but he gives her the keys to every single room in this giant mansion that he lives in.
I mean, why would you?
Right? And he tells her that she can go in any of these rooms except for one, where he says if she goes in that room, he will be extremely angry and she will have to face the consequences when he returns. So, for a few days, she's like, yeah, that's fine. She goes into all of these other rooms.
I mean, let's be honest, would you?
Almost definitely.
Yeah.
Right? Like, of course. You're alone in somebody else's house who's, well, I guess, I mean, it's technically her house.
Yeah, and you've been, like, told not to go in a room. This is the one room.
Yeah.
You can't, like, go in. I'm going out of town.
Yeah. So, naturally,
I would be like, keep the key with you.
For sure. But, I mean, he's tempting her on purpose, obviously.
Yeah, I think he's getting the itch.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, he obviously knows that curiosity is going to get the best of her, and it does. So, she goes around, and she eventually decides, yes, I'm going to open this door. So, she goes in, and she sees that the room is just full of blood, mm-hmm. and finds all of the dead bodies of his previous wives in there.
Hanging on hooks.
Yep. Just mutilated and disgusting. So she freaks out, she drops the key, it lands in the blood, and she's like, oh my god, what am I gonna do? So she leaves the room, locks the door, but the blood will not get off this key.
That's
weird.
It's
a magic key, and the blood is just permanently on there. So then when her husband returns, she's very scared because she realizes, obviously, something's gonna go down. So he is like, give me back my keys, and she doesn't want to do that, so he knows that something is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So he realizes that she has gone into his special room, and he's like, well, as punishment, you have to die. This is just what's gonna happen.
I mean, I would
have
just...
You have to die.
I would have just left.
Yeah, don't wait around for him to come back after you see that. Just leave. Also, her family lives next door. Like, what are you doing? So she's like, okay, fine, I have to die, I understand, but let me please pray first to God and, like, so that I can go to heaven at least.
Mm-hmm.
So he says fine for whatever reason, and she prays, but she goes upstairs and opens up a window and yells to the next door where her sister lives, and she yells at her sister to tell her two brothers to come over and save her. So she's kind of trying to avoid Bluebeard and keeps telling him, like, no, I'm still praying. Mm-hmm. Just a few more minutes. I'm almost done praying. And then eventually her brothers show up and they kill Bluebeard and everything is fine. And she ends up getting all of his estate and kind of distributes his wealth amongst her family and her new husband. But it's a really dark story. So, like, it's totally understandable that, you know, a company like Disney or any other children's stories would not really reproduce this as much.
Yeah,
like, it's not a well-known children's story.
Also, like, there's nothing magical.
No.
There's...
It's very mundane. It's, like, weirdly mundane.
Yeah, like, I don't... Is there any really kind of a moral?
Okay, this is what Charles Perrault says is his two morals are. He puts a moral on all of his stories. So his two morals for this is, the first one is basically that curiosity needs to be suppressed because, like, you should know better. And then the other one is that no husband should expect his wife to be able to suppress her curiosity in this way when you tell her not to go in a place.
So not like, don't murder people.
No, not at all. No, it's not
marry
like...
marry a person you don't know, or...
I was expecting, like, maybe, you know, she's been,
it could be
like, greedy.
Sometimes when you think things are okay,
yeah,
it, there can actually be a disastrous story that you don't know.
Yeah, I thought, oh, no, like, from the other research that I had done, people were like, well, the moral here is that, you know, she was super greedy and she saw his wealth, so that's why she married him, and she got past his blue beard because of that. And then when she realized that
she
he was evil,
to find that, or?
Yeah, then she faced the consequences. But in the end, she realized that wealth wasn't like everything, so that's why she distributed it to all of her family and everybody else. So, you know, and it's like, no, Charles Perrault's just like, actually, husbands should not expect that much of their wives, and they should know that they're gonna, like, be curious. But also, you shouldn't be curious, because
but, I
that's
mean,
bad.
Of not of wives, but of people, to be
just,
like,
yeah,
here's the key to a room, don't go in there.
But, like, in general, yeah, you should never do that to
but
anybody.
But also, it's just a random story of a businessman wants to get married.
Who's a serial killer.
Yeah, who's a serial killer.
Like, it's terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I think it's one of the scariest stories, because I think it is still relevant to a modern audience.
Yeah.
You know? Like,
it could happen in any time.
Exactly. It's the most relatable, for sure, as
I
far
mean,
as, like...
if you're a serial killer who's going to keep the bodies in a room, you're kind of an idiot.
But you're obviously... I mean, you're a little messed up, right? Like, you wanted her to find that. There's no way you didn't want her to find
that. You
want to
be married, you want to kill your wives, yet you still want to keep them around. So there's definitely something psychological going on
yeah,
there.
Yeah, it's a psychological thriller. It's, like, it's a really,
yeah,
it's so different for fairy tales.
And so Bluebeard is, I mean, and it's less common, but it's definitely, like, associated with the term of men who kill their wives in the same way that Black
yeah.
Widow
yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
is
yeah.
associated with wives who kill their husbands.
Yeah.
It's sort of the companion to that, I
yeah,
think.
For sure.
So, I mean, yeah, that's just a random... like,
it's
like,
so different.
I mean,
so
how many
different.
Collections of fairy tales, quote unquote, are people putting out, and they're like, oh, here's a frog prince, or here's Cinderella,
yeah,
and then let's just slip that one in.
Throw
there.
Throw that one in, for whatever reason.
Yeah, pretty, pretty strange. But, you know, I mean, that kind of thing wouldn't fly, like,
no,
in any other time.
No.
I mean, so, okay, Charles Perrault is, like, the 17th century...
I think
you
it's
think?
Early 1700s, so
oh,
18th
early
17th. Century. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Because I was thinking, I mean, if we were talking Grimm times, if you're talking early 19th century,
mm-hmm,
that's when people are starting to get really fascinated by, like, Gothic stuff.
Right,
so if you
right.
fit it into that timeline, I'd kind of think, like, okay, I kind of get it as far as, like...
It's weirdly modern with, like, this businessman who, like, he's kind of ugly, but he convinces people that he's a good guy... and, like, gets them to come and marry him. Like, it's so creepy, because it's, like, it can fit in any time period, I guess.
I wonder if it ever has been made into any kind of film or movie adaptation.
I did look it up, and there is a version of it that I believe was done in France, and, like, a few years ago,
mm-hmm,
but was really low budget. There's
mm-hmm
no, like, big budget films that I can find of this, or... any children's version whatsoever that's done of this, for good reason.
Well, yeah.
Because I don't know,
that's why I have a hard time even calling it a fairy tale.
No, I don't know how you would change it's, it
I guess,
to
I
make
guess
it adaptable.
I guess a folk tale would be more
yeah
appropriate.
Which, like, chances are means it was probably based off some real story, or, you know.
I'll tell you, though, it's a lot easier to get away with murder before the 20th century.
Very true, yeah.
And all that forensics and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to wrap up
all right
this podcast with a story that probably everybody knows, but has some unpleasant things to it as well. So Hansel and Gretel, which, of course, like all the others, has been told many times, but the Grimm brothers had their own version that they popularized. And in the version that most people know, Hansel and Gretel live in a cottage with their dad, who's a woodcutter, and their stepmom, who's a total cow. And we all know how, you know, they got lost in the woods and found the old witch's
mm-hmm
candy house. But what some people might not have known was that the reason they ended up in the woods is because... there was a famine in the land, and they were poor, and the stepmom. In some versions, she's the stepmom. In some versions, she's just the mom.
Right.
She talks to the dad and says, listen, like, we're all starving. These kids are going to die anyway. Let's just lead them into the woods and get rid of them. Because we'll at least have a chance to save ourselves.
Okay.
And he doesn't want to do it, but she eventually nags him and talks him into it. So the dad finally submits to the stepmom's nagging and agrees to lead them into the woods and basically lose them so they'll die and they won't have to feed them anymore. But Hansel and Gretel also couldn't sleep that night, so they were up and they heard this conversation. Mm-hmm. And Hansel sneaks out and he finds all the shiny white pebbles he can and he puts them in his pockets. So when the father takes them into the woods the next day, he's slowly dropping pebbles behind him. You know, they get very far in and the dad makes a fire and he says, you know, you guys fall asleep and then in the morning we'll keep going. And of course, when they wake up, the dad is gone.
Right.
But they've managed to find, they actually wake up while it's still dark out and the moon is shining down and they can see the white pebbles and they find their way back to the cottage. And of course, the stepmom is super pissed. The dad is somewhat relieved, but she then, you know, that night takes up the nagging again. She's like, you have to go again, get rid of these kids and like take them back into the forest, take them deeper. And, you know, he admits, because, I don't know, he's pussy whipped or has no spine or something. And so that night, Hansel again tries to go out and get pebbles, but the stepmom has locked them in their room this time, so he can't get out. In the morning, they get a small chunk of bread, and they are taken back into the forest, and he starts dropping the little bits of bread. And, this isn't a very good plan, because birds and animals are just eating the breadcrumbs.
Yeah.
So again, when they get left in the woods, even deeper now, they can't find their way back because there's no path whatsoever.
Okay.
And, you know, they wander, they're basically starving, and finally they stumble upon this house, and it's made out of gingerbread and cakes and gumdrops and sugar paned windows, and like, kind of a shitty thing to do, they just start eating it. Like, if it was me, even though I was starving, I'd probably, like, see if anybody was there and ask them if they had any food. So they're just, like, eating their windows and their roof. And this little old, they hear this voice saying, like, nibble, 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 somebody out there? And then they go, it's just the wind, it's nothing. And they keep eating the house. But, of course, she comes out, she's this evil witch, and she manages to catch them and puts them in cages. Luckily, she's quite blind, and even though she lives in this candy house for some reason, I guess only to trap children in the middle of the woods, she prefers to eat the children.
Of course. Yeah,
More cannibalism.
Yeah.
So she wants to fatten them up, and she's feeding them, and they're so hungry they can't resist eating some of the food, but she decides that, you know, Hansel's the one that she wants to eat first. And they're trying to trick her by, you know, she says, put out your finger, and then she'll go and touch it with her hand, but they'll hold out a stick, so she'll think that they're just bone thin.
Okay.
If I was trying to test the fatness on somebody, their finger wouldn't be the area that I'd be testing.
Yeah.
But it works out for them for, like, a little while.
Yeah.
Finally, she gets fed up, and she's just like, I'm hungry, I'm gonna cook you.
Yeah.
So she decides she's gonna cook Hansel, and she gets Gretel. She takes Gretel out. She decides she's probably also going to kill Gretel, too. But she's like, she says, you know, come over here and open the stove and put the firewood in it and get it going. And Gretel acts dumb, and she's like, I don't know what to do. And she's like, no, you just open the stove and, like, get closer to the fire, because she wants to push her in,
right.
I think.
Yeah.
And Gretel goes, I don't understand. Like, she's playing dumb. Yeah. And so the woman gets, you know, the witch gets mad, and she goes over there and she's like, just like this. And she opens the door and then Gretel pushes her in.
Smart kid.
And they close the door and the witch roasts alive, which, you know, she has coming to her. So at this point they run away and I guess somehow manage to get back to their own cottage.
Impressive.
Now.
Yeah.
I mean, they've probably filled up on gingerbread cake and stuff.
Yeah.
So. And inexplicably in the older versions they get back and the mom's just dead.
Oh, all right.
So, yeah, that's the thing. So maybe she just starved.
Right. Who knows? Famine got to her.
So, I mean, that's the generally the grim version, which is pretty much along the lines of what people know. But, right. I mean, like, parents willing to kill their children to save themselves and a witch who wants to eat little kids. So
pretty dark.
Pretty dark.
Pretty dark.
As a bonus, there's also the Scottish version called Molly Wumpy.
Nice, yep.
So, again, you have a man and a wife who have, they have, I think, 6 kids, and they are starving, and it's a bad time in the country. There's lots of famine, and because people don't care as much about girls, they decide that they have 3 boys and 3 girls, so they go, let's get rid of the girls. The wife says, take them into the woods and get rid of them, so that's quite similar. But in this story, there isn't a candy house and a witch, but there's a family of ogres. So the little girls are wandering around in the woods after their father has taken them there and left them there. And they find this house and they knock on the door. And the woman, the mom, answers the door. And I don't know if she's an ogre or if she's a human. But she says, okay, you can come in and I'll feed you.
I think she is an ogre. I feel like I do know this story.
Okay, she says, I'll come in and I'll feed you, but my husband's going to be home soon, and he might eat you. And they're like, okay, we'll take our chances.
Yeah.
And so they come in, and she feeds them, and she puts them to bed in the same room as her own 3 ogre children. And okay. I guess the mom does this, where she puts these rope necklaces around the necks of the human girls, and these gold necklaces around the necks of the ogre children. And then, so Molly, one of the daughters, she gets up and she switches all the necklaces. So that, because the dad comes in and he feels for the necklaces. And he finds the rope.
Ogres are blind.
Yeah, the ogres are blind. He finds the rope necklaces on his children and beats them to death. And, like, strangles them.
Okay.
And kills them all.
Yeah. Yeah. Lovely.
And they, so the human girls in all the kerfuffle are trying to run away. But he catches Molly and is obviously furious and just goes, you know, like, what am I going to do with you? And she goes, oh, well, you know, if I was going to punish somebody, I'd throw them in a sack and beat them to death with a stick. And he goes, okay, well, that's what I'm going to do to you.
Perfect.
So he goes into the woods to look for a big stick because he's got to find the best beating stick he can.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, Molly is so clever. She, like, the ogre and or human mom, she tricks her and she's like, oh, look at this thing in this sack is so amazing. And the mom's like, oh, what is it? I really want to see. And she somehow gets the mother to go into the sack and then quickly ties it up so that ogre dad comes back and beats his wife to death in the sack.
So he just kills everyone, entire family.
He kills his entire family. Lovely. I mean, he's kind of obviously like a bloodthirsty rage monster. So then, it's like, I didn't find very many versions of the story, but there's this part at the end, like, Molly runs away, and the ogre is chasing her, but then she gets to a hair bridge. A bridge made of hair?
Yeah, yeah.
Which she can cross, because she's a little girl.
But he's too heavy.
But he can't cross, because he's too heavy.
Of course.
So she gets away.
And that's just it.
And that's the story of Molly Wumple. Yeah, I don't know, like, it's...
Yeah, I definitely had a Scottish fairy tale book as a child.
I've never heard of that before, until I started looking it up in the last week or so.
The Scottish fairy tales are almost weirder, but maybe that's just because we're not, like, used to them.
But there was a part in one of the versions I found online where the ogre comes home and he does say, fee-fi-fo-fum, I smell like an unearthly human blood or something. And I was like, oh, is it just like a thing that
ogres
is in a few? But like, that's like a giant Jack and the Beanstalk.
Yeah.
It was kind of funny that popped out. But yeah. I mean, I think you could really get into so many different ethnic versions of different.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Especially if you get into like the Russian and Slavic.
Yeah.
And,
like, I even found a Chinese version of Little Red Riding Hood.
We didn't even talk about any, like, Asian folk tales.
No. Because there's, you just can't.
There's
like,
so
there's
many.
Just so many different versions that are so similar.
And creepy and gory and violent.
Yeah,
and
all just fun. Worldwide fun.
And back in the days before television, people would just read these stories to their children and then be like, okay, good night.
Bedtime. I'm just asleep.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot for joining me.
Yeah, it was fun.
I mean, we might have to just do 5 more episodes of Fairy Tale.
I would not be opposed to that.
Yeah. There's so many of them.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much for joining us while we talked about our creepy and dark fairy tales. Christine and I both agreed that it would be quite easy to do many more of these about fairy tales, stories, and folklore. So stay tuned. That could very well happen. Thank you so much for listening. And of course, if you have any feedback or you'd like to make a suggestion for a topic, please email us at thetipsyarchives@gmail.com.